the dark web, it's a bad place, right? That's why it's called dark.
Yeah, or something like that. But the dark web really came in as a tabloid media term, and it's not so much a place, because, you know, where is the internet? Well, it's kind of everywhere and nowhere. It's more a way of doing things. If you want to be on the dark web, then what you're doing is using tools to hide your location and hide your identity to make you harder to find. Now, there are certainly legitimate reasons you might want to do that, but obviously it is of benefit to criminals to keep quiet and keep out of the way.
Okay, so when you're saying you use tools, how easy are these tools to get, or is it a knowledge set that if you know anything about the web, you can press this button, and write this code, and away you go?
Well, you don't even have to write codes. The tools are just software tools you download from the internet, just like you might download any other software. The two main things you need is one, something to encrypt your data, and anything like WhatsApp or Signal or Wicker, which was for a while Malcolm Turnbull's tool of choice, to just encode the data between you and the person you're sending it to, so that can't be looked at. And the other thing is a tool called Tor, T-O-R, which instead of opening up a connection over the internet directly between you and who you're talking to or which website you're visiting, it bounces that connection all across the world randomly to maybe 10, even 20 locations, perhaps more, which slows you down. But for someone trying to work out where you are, the fact that your communication is going from Adelaide to Venezuela to Uruguay to Moscow,
like
to London,
in the movies, where they're going, oh no, the signal's bouncing from da 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 da.
Yeah, exactly the thing. So you trace the first hop, and then you're somewhere else, and then you try and work it up from there. The thing about the movies, though, is all that is automated. They just sit there and press buttons and the lights flash and it happens. In reality, you've actually got to communicate with the law enforcement agency in the other country, because they don't own the equipment it's travelling through, so they have to get law enforcement to contact the internet service provider in that country, who's then got to respond to the request. It's not a matter of, you know, wait, you know, it'll take 10 more seconds to do this. It might take 10 hours. Mm. And by then, who cares? They've moved on.
Mm-hmm. So, given all of that, does it really matter that our Medicare card numbers have ended up in this place?
It does, because your Medicare number is part of your 100 points of ID that you need to open a bank account or get a credit card. So if someone's got your Medicare number, I forget how many points out of 100 that is, but it's quite a lot, then they just need to find out, say, I don't know, your passport number, and again, any hotel you've stayed at or any airline you've travelled with will have that information. And then you don't really need much else. Maybe a driver's licence number. Again, that can be obtained very easily from any bouncer at a nightclub that checks ID and scans ID before you go in.
So this is then more about identity theft and less about people accessing medical records or anything directly attached to your Medicare card.
That's right. Nearly all of this is always about identity, or nearly always about identity theft. That's the big one, because getting all these individual bits and pieces are not the end game. Being able to clock up $20,000 of credit in your name is the aim, because they can then order anything they want once they've got a credit card in your name, and you only find out 6 or 12 or 18 months later when the bailiffs appear at your doorstep.
Well, Human Services Minister Alan Tudge is saying that there should be an investigation in this, but he's moving to quell fears that those personal details have been traded and everything else. But, I mean, how can this information be gathered on a big scale?
Well, I don't know that they have gathered it on a big scale, because if you're moving out, I mean, how many Medicare numbers are there in Australia? Our population is 24.5 million. There must be, with kids involved on their parents' card, there must be like 12 million Medicare numbers out there. All of that data can still fit on a memory stick in your pocket, but downloading it all to put on that memory stick and walk out of the door would be tricky. What seems to have happened, and this is my guess, I'm now speculating on the basis of the information in the media so far, is that you've always been able to get individuals' Medicare numbers or driver's license details by paying money to a corrupt person inside the organisation. Because even these prices are not unreal. It's something that private detectives would have done all the time. And you see that in the movies all the time, don't you? Someone slips $50 to the person down at the local office of wherever, and now I've got, you know, now I've got your home address and date of birth and all of those things, and off you go. What someone has done here, I think, is they've just organised an organised supply chain to do it. You place your request at their website on the dark web, which looks just like any other website, probably, where you buy things. It's just another shop. You put in the details of the person you want. That person could then contact their mole inside the organisation and provide that information one at a time. Now, I noticed that the report in The Guardian by Paul Farrell, who's an excellent investigative journalist, when he did this, the web message on the website was that they will soon have a way of ordering in bulk, which implies that at the moment, moment they can only process things one at a time, which to me, again, this is speculation, but to me that points to there being some sort of manual system involved. But you know, as I say, there's a reason the word organised is in the phrase organised criminal. You know, people forget that. They're not just randomly kicking in doors of houses to steal. I was about to say steal the video. That's a bit old, isn't it? steal your laptop. Whatever. You set up a supply chain, you make sure your people follow procedures and so on. That's what I think has happened here.
What about our data, though? Because whenever you talk about things like this or cyber hacks or whatever it might be, you know, is our government really ever going to be in front of people who want our information if they really, you know have the know-how to get it?
I'll put that question another way.
Right.
If someone wants to steal something from your house and is determined to do so, can you stop them?
Okay. No.
No. Like, and no matter how much you try, no matter how much anyone tries, no security system can be 100% perfect. And one of the fundamental reasons why that is so is that there are so many vulnerabilities in it, and people are the vulnerabilities. And systems, no matter how well you design them, will have some flaw because you can't think of everything. And the bad guys only have to find the one thing you forgot, not the one thing you forgot, any of the one things you forgot. And this is always going to be the problem. So you can never completely remove risk. You can mitigate it, you can reduce it, but there always will be a problem. That said, you know, there are known methods of reducing the risk, and that just becomes an arms race between the bad guys thinking up more cunning ways to sneak in, and the defenders noticing that, working out how to prevent that vulnerability being exploited.
Well, still, Gary, and we have to leave it there just so I can run home and make sure I've locked up so my VHS machine and my cassette decks are okay. Great to talk to you. Thanks for your point of view.
No worries, Ali.
That's still Gary in there, freelance journalist, commentator and broadcaster.